that sort of reminded me of tic-tac-toe. Acrid smoke burst from the metal like before, filling the air with a dense black cloud before vanishing in a sheet of golden flame. The door began to glow cherry red, and worry filled Danton's face.
Oh, no.
With those words, the door exploded, throwing him backward in a flurry of debris. He slammed into the wall behind me with a wet thud and slid down to the ground, eyes rolled up in the back of his head. My gaze moved from him back to the door, and as my shitty luck would have it, a half-man, half-grizzly bear the size of Nebraska wearing black leather pants stood just behind the threshold of the door. I'll admit it was a touch disconcerting, and that was before I realized he had nipple piercings.
"Nice bear monster," I said as the thing leapt at me, huge yellow fangs bared at me.
I dodged, and it was a good thing, too, because when the monster landed, it dented the steel floor. I whirled, putting my remaining 4 shots into its stupid face, because I was Mac Brennan, and I was good at shooting bear monsters in the face. Its skull evaporated in a crimson spray that covered Danton's unconscious body in all sorts of gooey bits. I spared a glance at my empty guns and shoved them back in my pants. I had half a mind to toss them, since it seemed unlikely I would find bullets, sans another gun, but hey, why take chances? Besides, it left the Superman defense on the table. You know, where, after emptying their guns at the Man of Steel, the robbers throw their guns at him like it's somehow more effective than the bullets they just fired.
"What's next?" I called, approaching the doorway. "A were-rhino? You got Bebop and Rocksteady in there?"
A soft, high-pitched squeak of a laugh filled my ears as I found myself staring into the face of a woman wearing an eye patch over her right eye. She had a massive scar running down the right side of her face until it disappeared beneath the neck of her black crop top. Her silver-streaked black hair was put up in one of those pineapple do's women wore at the gym when they were about to get all sorts of serious in Zumba. She looked me up and down, and from the twinkle in her one green eye, I got the distinct impression she was totally picturing me naked. Behind her, I saw 2 shirtless men with washboard abs wearing black leather pants, similar to the ones on the bear I'd shot. I really sort of hoped that didn't mean what I thought it meant, especially since they also had pierced nipples. But sadly, I was pretty sure I didn't have that kind of luck. And here I was, all out of silver bullets. Swell. Just swell. Next time, I was only going to shoot the bear monster in the face once.
"You must be Mac,"
the woman purred in a husky Katy Perry voice as she stepped out from behind the bloody mishmash of flesh strapped to a metal table.
"Ricky has told me so much about you, mostly about how you're going to kill me. She's been quite insistent on that last point."
She pursed her lips and put 1 latex-glove-covered hand on her hip. I wasn't quite sure why she was wearing Daisy Dukes, but it struck me a little odd, especially given our current circumstance.
"I'm curious, though. How do you think you're going to manage that exactly?"
As she said the last part, things began to writhe beneath the flesh of the 2 guys next to her. It was also when I realized the horrible carcass on the table was looking at me. Ricky stared at me with 1 bloody eye. Her red hair was stuck to her face with gobs of goo. It looked like Jin had taken a page out of a high school dissection and sliced her open before cinching the flaps of flesh open with huge steel nails so the wounds couldn't heal. More nails impaled her wrists and feet, pinning her to the table like a macabre butterfly. A horrified, sickening rage filled me with the sudden, intense need to crush the life from Jin with my bare hands. When I was done with her, the wrath of an angry god would be a welcome alternative. My tattoos spewed flame from the forges of hell themselves as my hands curled into white-knuckled fists. I was going to kill them all, tear them limb from limb. When this was over, there would be nothing left.
"How dare you touch her?" I snarled, bringing up my demonic hand. "Ignis!"
A blast of hellfire, unlike any I'd called into being before, exploded from my palm. It didn't slam into the right goon so much as it reduced him to ash as he tried to leap out of the way on legs all bent and half-shifted. My second fireball stuck his compatriot in the chest. It burned straight through him and blackened the wall behind him. He charged at me anyway, still only half-transformed and trailing bits of flaming entrails. I ducked his attack, a wild swipe with a half-formed set of claws, and drove my elbow into his chin. There was a loud crack as his misshapen jaw snapped together. My spider sense went nuts in my head as I stepped around, dragging the guy in front of me in time to catch a shotgun blast with what remained of his chest. The guy bucked like he'd been, well, shot. But I didn't stay to watch what happened next, because despite the ringing in my ears, I could hear the telltale sound of buckshot being pushed from his flesh and hitting the metal floor. The woman with the L-driver eye patch calmly cocked her shotgun and fired at me again. Thankfully, I was already twisting away when she blasted me full of buckshot, otherwise it wouldn't have struck my trench coat. Agony exploded through my side as I hit the ground like a broken doll. I lay there, the breath knocked from my lungs, but as she racked another shot, I realized one important thing. While I was pretty sure my ribs were bruised, I wasn't full of holes. Evidently, my trench coat was bite-proof and bulletproof. Maybe the water in the pool had a lot less to do with my survival this morning than I'd initially thought. I scrabbled across the floor and ducked behind a metal table as another shotgun blast exploded from her weapon, pinging off the metal behind where I'd been a moment ago. I surged to my feet, grabbing a steel chair and flinging it at her with all the strength I could muster. She lashed out with her shotgun, sweeping the weapon through the air in a blur of motion that caught the chair mid-flight. The shotgun hit the chair with so much force, the metal barrel bent with an ear-splitting shriek. The chair went flying across the room and slammed into the far wall. It crumpled to the floor in a tangled heap of crumpled metal. She gave her gun a cursory glance before dropping the ruined weapon to the ground.
"You can't beat me, Mac," she said, licking her lips as she sauntered toward me, her beach bunny sandaled feet slapping the steel floor with each step. "I'm way too strong."
Her hand shot out, catching my throat between her thumb and forefinger. She lifted me off the ground with ease, despite me being a good 8 inches taller than her.
"And way too fast."
"Which is why he brought me, Jin," Danton said from the doorway.
"Danton, I thought you were dead,"
the woman said, turning her head toward him, and as she did, I slammed my fists down on her collarbones. She yelped in pain, instinctively releasing me, and I fell. My back smacked into the concrete in a way destined to make a chiropractor very rich, and even though I was lying there unable to do more than moan, Jane ignored me. I was officially less interesting than Danton, and strangely, was okay with that. As she stepped over my body, Danton threw a handful of purple rose petals at her. They fluttered pathetically through the room on lazy air currents before bursting into flames that congealed into an honest-to-God Chinese dragon. Talk about a switcheroo. The purple-scaled creature shook its massive head, snorted a gout of purple flame from its elephantine nostrils, and leapt at the woman with its huge, glinting claws.
"Nah, love. The rumors surrounding my death have been overstated to protect the innocent," Danton said, weaving his hands through the air in a way that suggested he was controlling a 20-foot-long, fire-breathing serpent. "Unfortunately, you're none too innocent," he tisked.
The dragon's jaws snapped just short of Jin as she stepped lithely back a single step and glared at the monster like it was an annoying insect. Then she punched the dragon right between the eyes, and it exploded into a cloud of flower petals that fell lifelessly to the floor. Chapter 16. Horror spread across Danton's face as he stared at the broken, burning remains of his dragon.
"That was my best dragon, love," he said, trying to crack a smile that died before it reached his eyes.
He swallowed hard, rummaging in his pockets, and as he pulled something shiny and pointy free, he slowed, like he was suddenly a character in a movie played at a drastically reduced speed. Jin hadn't moved. She'd just looked at him, her single eye fixed upon his face. Danton stopped moving altogether. I'd been on the receiving end of some truly scary facial expressions before, but this one could have stopped a lesser man's heart. Still, it was a little weird that he was literally frozen in place. How was she doing that? I sucked in a breath. Could she do it to me, too? I hoped not. That would make for a rescue attempt even worse than Danton's had been.
"I'm a bit stronger than when we last met, Danton," Jin said, holding up the hand she'd just used to Mike Tyson a dragon.
The skin was gone. Instead, her hand was covered by a glistening green chitin shell. She took a simple step forward, and her skin tore in a way that suggested it didn't quite fit over her insides anymore. Bits of gooey meat splattered to the ground around her, and as she sloughed off her meat suit, what seemed like a grin spread across her mandibles. It was hard to tell for sure, since I'd never seen a nearly 6-foot praying mantis grin before. Let me tell you, it was one of the single most terrifying things I'd ever seen. And somehow, Danton still wasn't moving. What the hell was wrong with him? Was this some kind of mantis thing? Wait, didn't praying mantises eat the heads of their mates? Well, even if he had done the nasty with her, there was no way I was letting Danton get his head bitten off by a giant bug. No, if anyone was getting reduced to a headless corpse, it was her. She'd hurt Ricky. I forced myself to my feet, even though everything in me felt broken. That demanded blood. Jin loomed over the still statuesque demon hunter, her huge, hideous maw opened wide.
"You are one ugly motherfucker," I called in my best Arnold impression.
While it was way worse than Ricky's had been earlier, I was hoping she heard it, and had offered her some slight bit of comfort. The mantis, formerly known as Jin, swiveled her head nearly 180 degrees to look at me with one red, multifaceted eye. The other was still marred by that horrible scar, reminding me of a taillight with a bulb out.
"Do you think you're clever?" she asked in her husky Katy Perry voice.
I could almost imagine her crooning about California girls and saying she was hot enough to melt my popsicle. To say it ended the possibility of a teenage dream would be a major understatement.
"No, I think I'm deadly," I said, and her gaze swept over me.
It hit me like a sledgehammer, and I stumbled backward. I gripped the edge of the table nearest me for balance, and my fingers touched something slick and wet. I ignored it, trying to push off the force of her mind. Jin clucked, and as she did so, I felt the cat demon look up, scoff with a noise that reminded me of a cat coughing up a hairball, and shut its eyes. The pressure dissipated. Well, that was pretty freaking awesome, let me tell you. Cat demon 1, horrible mantis 0.
"You aren't even wearing shoes," she replied, a strange mix of shock and annoyance on her face as she pointed at my sock-clad feet.
It was true. My sodden loafers were still in the other room, buried under a ton of bacon-flavored rabbit slime.
"You make an excellent point." I pulled my empty gun from my waistband and pointed it at her. "I'm going to need your shoes."
"Seriously? That isn't even loaded. I mean, the slide is clearly open."
Jin shook her head at me and took a step toward me. It clicked ominously on the cement floor, summoning visions of roaches crawling over my skin.
"Besides, if you'd had bullets, you'd have shot my compatriots. You did not."
She gestured to the still wounded werebear on the ground. He wasn't moving, but that was likely due to the trash can lid-sized hole in his torso.
"Ignis," I said, and threw a blast of hellfire at her with my other hand.
She batted it aside with a silver-edged, scythe-like limb. The blast struck the wall next to the chair, and while it turned the metal cherry red, it didn't do much else.
The hellfire thing is so yesterday. Got any new tricks?
She asked, taking another step toward me and extending her scythe toward me at lightning speed. The point struck me under the chin with enough force to lift my head up and expose my fleshy neck, but not to pierce my skin.
What's the matter? Mantis got your tongue?
Her mandibles gyrated next to my throat as she leaned in close to me. A shriek of pain filled the room, and without thinking, I turned my head toward it, slicing open the underside of my chin in the process. As blood dripped down my neck, I saw Ricky forcibly tear herself free of the spikes, somehow rising, despite being a carved-open Thanksgiving turkey version of her former self. The sound of her flesh ripping free of the spikes, nailing her to the table, made my gut churn as she leveled the eye that wasn't swollen shut at Jin.
"Put him down,"
she growled wetly, spraying blood and saliva from her lips.
"Now... see, this is why I love bringing werewolves to my dungeon,"
Jin said, regarding Ricky like a pleasant surprise.
"You can keep hurting them over and over again, and just when you think the party's over, you find out they're up for more."
She flung me like a rag doll across the room. I hit a steel table near Danton hard enough to make agony scream through my left hip before crashing uselessly to the floor with said table on top of me. Ricky leapt on the creature, her hands formed into misshapen claws that dug into the mantid's chitin with a sound like nails scraping off of sheet metal. Jin stabbed her scythe-like arms through Ricky's torso and tore them outward in an explosion of gore. Ricky fell to the ground in a steaming puddle of blood and guts. But that didn't stop her from reaching up and grabbing onto Jin's ankle with one blood-smeared hand. Jin smiled wryly and drove one arm down through the back of Ricky's neck. The tip burst from the front of her throat, and I watched in horror as Ricky's hand slid off the creature's ankle, leaving only a trail of scarlet painting the surface of Jin's armored leg in its wake.
"No!"
I screamed, flinging the table off of me before I knew what I was doing. The distant sound of it crashing into the wall was forgotten as I scrambled to my feet. My vision tunneled, focusing on the mantis. I suddenly didn't care about finding Pierce or saving my sister. No, the only thing I cared about was stopping Jin from hurting Ricky. That was not allowed. I threw myself bodily at Jin. My shoulder collided with her insectoid back, and I wrapped my hands around her body. As she stumbled forward in an awkward twist because one arm was still impaling Ricky, she slipped on the werewolf's entrails. Jin's feet came off the ground as I lifted with all my might. Her arm tore free of Ricky as I shifted my weight and drove her into the floor with all the momentum and force my body could manage. Jin's forehead bounced awkwardly off the concrete as I called upon all my power and rage. My right fist came down spewing magic and fire behind it like a comet. The blow struck the mantis between the shoulders and punched straight through her shell with a resounding crack.
"Die,"
I said, releasing all my pent-up rage and frustration inside her in the form of fire straight from the forges of hell. The smell of burned lobster filled my nostrils as her shell turned white-hot and steam began to pour from her joints. Fire shot from her mouth and eyes as the creature cooked from the inside. Without bothering to check Jin's overall doneness, I leapt off her glowing lobster-red back and scrambled over to Ricky. I gathered her up in my arms and, much to my surprise, felt her heart beating in her chest.
"Come on, you can heal this," I said, tears spilling from my eyes and peppering her slack face. "It's barely a flesh wound," I lied.
One of her eyes fluttered open, and I got the feeling she was seeing me for the first time. Really seeing me. In that moment, she took stock of everything I was and somehow didn't find me wanting. Instead, a small smile crossed her mashed-up lips.
"Okay,"
she whispered, even though I didn't know how, since her throat was a gaping maw of carnage and horror. Her heartbeat strengthened just a touch, and a strange look came over her face. She struggled, trying to move, and as I opened my mouth to ask her what was wrong, someone brained me from behind with a steel chair. Chapter 17. I awoke with a splitting headache in the back of a Volkswagen Bug, which, let me tell you, was not really expected nor very comfortable. The smell of greasy cheeseburgers and french fries filled my nostrils as I tried to sit up. Even that tiny movement made nausea surge up my throat, and I had to stop myself before I threw up all over myself. There was a flash of movement from the front seat, and Ricky's face appeared over the top of the gray seat. She looked like she'd never been in a fight at all, which was good, because the last time I'd seen her, she'd been roadkill. Relief came flooding through me. She was alive and moving. Thank God.
"Want a french fry?"
she asked around a mouthful of cheeseburger while offering me a stained paper bag. "Did you get the number of that bus?" I asked, rubbing the back of my head. There was a knot big enough to qualify for its own zip code protruding from the back of my skull.
"That was your friend, the Demon Hunter. After he tried to cave in your head with a steel folding chair like some kind of WWE wrestler, he took Jin's body and left us there."
She shrugged, evidently unconcerned by the fact Danton had given me a goddamned concussion for no good reason. Well, that was the last straw. He could consider his invitation to my birthday party rescinded. "You seem rather chipper about the whole thing," I muttered, finally managing to sit up despite my double vision. It was harder than I'd have expected, since there were fewer places less roomy than the back of a Volkswagen.
"I am happy, and you should be too. He didn't kill us both. That's what normally happens with guys like that. And, well, you know, after I recovered, ate a werebear and carried you out of there, I stole this car and went to McDonald's."
She shook the bag at me.
"I'm loving it."
"You couldn't have found a bigger vehicle?" I asked, wondering what she meant by ate a werebear. Something told me she meant exactly what I thought it meant. But no, that couldn't be. Surely she hadn't actually eaten one of the guys from before, had she? "And why McDonald's?"
"When you're the one who emerges from an evil lair, half-starved, bleeding, and carrying a guy twice your size, you can pick the car, okay?"
She smiled.
"I had a car just like this in high school, so I felt sentimental toward it, I guess. As to your second question, I'll have you know I actually like McDonald's quite a bit. Their cheeseburgers are like candy, and the fries are pretty good, too, once you dump a ton of salt on them."
She shrugged. "I'm not sure what the deal is with people not salting things nowadays. Knowing how much salt to put on food is one of the most basic parts of cooking. It's right up there with boiling water." She shoved another handful of fries into her mouth and chewed. As she swallowed, her body visibly started to fill out. It was weird, because while I wouldn't quite say she looked emaciated, I got the impression her body had cannibalized part of her structure to heal itself. And now that she was eating, it was trying its best to revert back to its normal form. She caught me staring and blushed slightly.
"Werewolves require a lot of calories to heal. I remember one time I went to one of those all-you-can-eat Chinese buffets after a fight with some vampires. Man, I thought they were going to throw me out after I ate the 16th plate of crab legs and all the egg rolls. They didn't, but they started serving things so slowly, I left because the only thing left at the buffet was the broccoli from the broccoli beef. Not a lot of protein in broccoli."
She stuck a finger down her throat and made a gagging gesture. "How many cheeseburgers have you eaten?" I asked, taking the bag from her and pulling a yellow-wrapped sandwich free. It was the only one in the bag.
"I bought about 100. There's still some in there, right?"
She raised a questioning eyebrow at me.
"I tried to save you some because there's no more McNuggets."
"Yeah, plenty," I said, not having the heart to tell her it was the last one. Something told me if I did, she might snatch it away, and near as I could tell, it would be the first thing I'd eaten in over 24 hours. I bit into the sandwich, surprised at how good it tasted. Sudden ravenous hunger overtook me, and before I could stop myself, I'd taken another bite and tried to swallow the whole mass without chewing. Everything inside me revolted, but not because it tasted bad. No, it was because as I tried to choke down the burger, my mouth got so dry I nearly gagged. I was never really good at eating things without copious amounts of water, let alone half a barely chewed cheeseburger. I swallowed as best I could and looked around for a drink while trying to work up some spit. Good. I'd have felt bad if I ate 200 chicken nuggets, 20 bags of fries, 6 shakes, and 100 cheeseburgers by myself, she said, and, like she was reading my mind, offered me a ginormous cup. I snatched it from her and took several swallows of the cold liquid. When I was done, I shook my head. Iced tea? I'd have thought Little Miss Calories Don't Go Straight to My Hips would be drinking Coke. Did you know there is enough acid in a can of Coke to dissolve a mouse in a month? She shook her head, sticking her tongue out in disgust. I once watched a video where they put a mouse in a can of Mountain Dew and checked it a month later. The only thing left of the creature was some hair, teeth, and a bit of tail. She made a gagging noise. I haven't touched the stuff since. You're aware the acid in your stomach can chew through steel, right? I asked, before taking another bite of my burger. It went down much easier since I chased it with several gulps of tea. Yeah, but that doesn't mean I want to go swallow a license plate either. She grinned mischievously at me. I mean, I did it once on a dare, but we all do crazy things in college. Those days are long behind me. She shoved an entire box of French fries in her mouth. My body is a temple, she added around a mouthful of chewed up potato. I grinned. I couldn't help it. She was being silly in a way I really appreciated, especially since we needed to go attack the strongest werewolf in the state, and our last encounter with the supernatural bad guy had gotten me brained by a steel chair and her disemboweled. As that thought came ripping through my brain, horror filled me. What time is it? I asked, glancing around for a clock. But all that succeeded in doing was making the room spin. I needed to get over this whole concussion thing if I wanted to save my sister. For all I knew, I'd been out for days, but I didn't think so. For one, my body didn't hurt in the way it would have if I'd been unconscious for a while. No, my muscles were still reasonably loose. For two, I was sure Ricky wouldn't have let that happen, although I couldn't have told you why. We have time, Mac, she said, spinning in her seat. I heard her rustle around in a bag before turning back around. She tossed a pair of pill bottles and a 5-hour energy drink at me. They landed in my lap. Take the ibuprofen and the Tylenol. It will help with the massive headache. The calories will help you heal, too. You might not have my awesome metabolism, but you aren't quite human anymore, either. Give your body fuel, and it'll fix all that ails you. And the energy drink? I asked, popping the top off the pill bottles and shoving a handful of each into my mouth. I wasn't quite sure how many to take. I knew 4 pills of ibuprofen was a prescription dose, but that didn't account for the whole demonic arm thing. Maybe I needed more, or maybe less? I went with 4 and 2 Tylenol, because I hated my liver and kidneys. Then I washed the whole thing down with the 5-hour energy drink, because my heart could go jump off a bridge. Yeah, it's probably overkill, since we'll probably be dead before the 5 hours is up. She handed me a can of Red Bull. But then again, if not, maybe we can put some of that extra energy to use. She grinned mischievously at me, and I had the sudden urge to leap over the seat and pull her into my arms. It's a promise, I said, taking the can from her and downing it in about half a second. I couldn't tell you why, but I absolutely loved Red Bull. I'd never really been a fan of Monster or other energy drinks, but I could drink the heck out of Red Bull. Still, I didn't normally use it as a chaser for a 5-hour ibuprofen and Tylenol. That was brand new territory. I sighed. Maybe Sarah was right. I ought to be a bit more careful. Then again, if I wound up getting addicted to Red Bull and Tylenol, I was probably doing okay, all things considered. After all, Danton had smoked like a chimney, and had scaled 15 flights of stairs like some kind of Olympic runner. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't thinking of climbing back there now in case there isn't a next time, Ricky said, spinning back around in her chair and starting the car. But I want to give you something else to live for. Besides, I'd much rather our first time be somewhere more comfortable than the back of a Volkswagen. I'm sorry, but that's a bit too high school for me. So just sit back and relax while I hit up the Burger King across the way, because we'll be at Pierce's hideout about 30 minutes from now.
How did you find out where Pierce was? I killed Jin, I said as relief flooded me. I'd sort of hoped she'd managed to figure it out, otherwise I was screwed. Thankfully she had. I just wasn't sure how she'd managed to do it, since when I'd found her, she hadn't been flayed open.
I told you, I ate a werebear. Well, there was some time between the first and last bite where he spilled his figurative and literal guts to me.
She pumped her eyebrows a couple times at me in the rearview mirror and grinned, revealing her braces-clad teeth. Somehow, I didn't think she was joking. I took a deep breath and tried to concentrate on what we had to do next, and not on what she just said, because we would be storming a castle in a half hour. Only I couldn't, and not for the reason you might be thinking. No, her words made me think of what Danton had said when I tore apart Jin's restaurant to find her. He'd said she imprinted on me. While I wasn't sure what that meant exactly, I was starting to wonder if maybe her need to jump my bones might be based on that, and not me at all. Hey, Ricky, I asked, already dreading the words about to come out of my mouth. What's imprinting? The car jerked to a stop almost before it started, and I saw her spin around in her seat and look at me. I couldn't read the expression on her face, because it held way too many emotions. There was some sadness, some confusion, but mostly there was panic. Gut-shaking, knees-collapsing panic.
Why do you ask? She said, and the words came out in a squeak.
Danton said he thought you might have imprinted on me. I tried to smile at her. He told me to tell you how I feel.
Mac?
She swallowed hard and looked away from me as tears filled her eyes.
Imprinting happens when a werewolf really likes someone. It causes our emotions and thoughts to push into the person we like. It distorts our emotions, makes us irrational. If that's true, if I've imprinted on you, what you feel for me might not be real at all. It could all just be me projecting on top of you.
She dropped down behind the seat so I couldn't see her. Ricky, I don't think you have to worry about that.
How would you know, Mac?
She shouted, opening the door and leaping from the car. She was already walking away.
You don't even have a memory. Jesus Christ! How could I have been so stupid?
I scrambled out of the car after her, suddenly frantic with the need to comfort her, to assure her it wasn't true.
Except what if it was?
I stopped before I reached her, trying to puzzle out how I felt about that. What if it was all fake? Except I didn't think it was. I wasn't sure when Ricky had imprinted on me. For all I knew, it could have been in the moment where she let me go. But I didn't think it was. No, I was sure it had happened after Sarah had left us alone in the hotel room.
Ricky, stop! I called as she made her way through the parking lot in front of the big box store. I don't want you to go.
She stopped and turned to look at me.
Mac, I can't have imprinted on you. It takes away free will. It's not a good thing.
Danton didn't seem to think so. I walked slowly toward her, hoping she wouldn't bolt. And hear me when I say this. You wouldn't need mind control to make me like you. As I got close to her, I realized she was trembling. Tears streaked down her cheeks. I'd like you anyway.
You don't know that, Mac, she said, and her voice was quiet. She wouldn't even look at me, No, she just kept staring at my bare, muck-covered feet.
You're going to have to trust me, I said, pulling her close to me, and surprisingly, she let me do it. Holding her against me felt like finding a missing puzzle piece.
Okay?
Okay, she said, burying her face into my chest. But after this is done, I'm going to talk with Dwayne. He can mix up a potion to see if your feelings are real. She looked up at me, and even though I wanted to tell her it wasn't necessary, I knew it would make her feel better if I agreed.
Fair enough, I said, and even though I wasn't sure why the universe would thrust something so potentially destructive onto the two of us, I kissed her like it might be the last time I ever got to do it. Chapter 18. When we pulled up outside Pierce's hideout, I was suddenly glad it was nighttime. Otherwise, the prospect of sneaking into an amusement park remarkably similar to SeaWorld with guns would be dicey. Fortunately, it was dark, so beyond a few security lights and the obvious rent-a-cop at the entrance to the parking lot, there wasn't much standing between us and the chain-link fence around said parking lot. I'd reloaded both my Glocks with more silver ammunition, and was super thankful I hadn't thrown them at Jin, because Ricky hadn't gotten new pistols. No, she'd just snagged a couple boxes of 45 caliber silver bullets, which were now nestled safely in my trench coat pocket. In addition to that, I had a pair of silver-bladed hunting knives strapped to my thighs, and another smaller blade slid into the work boots I was now wearing. I even had a grenade. It was pretty awesome, and would be more awesome when I used it to explode some bad guys, which I guess said something about my state of mind. Man, I really needed some therapy. Ricky had kindly gotten me a change of clothing in addition to the weapons, food, and car. I was now clad in blue jeans, Timberland work boots, which, while not Red Wings, were still pretty comfortable, and a Rage Against the Machine t-shirt. What's with the shirt? I asked, hoping the whole alternative metal band and trench coat thing wasn't a recipe for getting me shot by the first upstanding and gun-toting citizen who saw me.
It's so you can go all bulls on parade with your pocket full of shells?
She patted the pocket on my trench coat where my bullets were stored.
You're just jealous of my guns, I said, barely resisting the urge to flex in her general direction.
Unlike me, who was loaded for werebear, Ricky didn't have so much as a butter knife on her person. Then again, she was a werewolf who had successfully eaten something like 16 pounds of food in the last 20 minutes and still seemed ravenous. If she'd really eaten a werebear like she'd claimed, I certainly wouldn't want to be standing in front of her in a threatening way. We stood just on the other side of the fence leading to the parking lot. I had half a mind to scale it, but there was razor wire at the top, and that would probably be hell for my complexion. Besides, while I was ready to go all guns blazing, I was happy taking a moment to not have people shoot at me or try to eat my liver. Call me old-fashioned. Once we entered the park, it was anything goes.
So what's the plan? I asked, glancing at Ricky.
She'd switched out of her bloody rags for jeans and an overly large black t-shirt that said, "Ask me about my ninja costume," in navy blue block letters.
You get in your ninja costume and take them out Snake Eyes style?
With one quick movement, Ricky had the hem of her oversized t-shirt pulled up over her face, revealing the caricature of a growling ninja.
Yes, she said before breaking into giggles and dropping the shirt.
I snickered and shook my head.
Stop being cool and answer the question. I'm not sure how to go about invading SeaWorld.
She touched her chest with one stubby finger.
Why, Mac Brennan, you think I'm cool? Really?
She batted her eyes at me, and something about it made me want to kiss her. I didn't, but I wanted to, really badly. Instead, I shoved the feeling down beneath a layer of professional badassery. Kissing her right now would be stupid. I needed to focus. After this was over and Pierce was spending the rest of his days in hell, I could entertain those kinds of thoughts. Right now, they were a distraction that could get both of us killed.
Well, not in the cool kids downtown no one has actually ever met sort of way. More in the guy who buys you beer in high school sort of way.
I shot a wry grin in her direction.
Thanks. You just compared me to the 21-year-old stoner who tries to get with high school chicks.
She let out a slow breath, grabbed hold of the chain link, and tore it apart like it was made of tissue paper and not metal. She held the rent fence open for me and gestured for me to go inside.
After you, princess.
I don't think you're like a 21-year-old stoner, I said, ducking into the parking lot and waiting for her in the totally walking off kind of way. He's way cooler than you. He always gave me weed for inviting him to parties. Not that I'd ever admit to inhaling.
She slugged me in the shoulder. It hurt. A lot. I didn't show it. Much.
Like you'd remember, you have no memory, she said, walking up beside me and scanning the horizon while her nostrils flared. It made me wonder how good her sense of smell really was. Actually, I didn't want to know, since I'd recently been in a sewer and covered in rabbit slime. I probably needed like 6 showers just to get back to how I'd smelled when I'd crawled out of the dumpster the other day.
It's actually better this way, because I can just make up stuff, and as far as I know, it's true.
I pulled one of my Glocks free, not because I saw anyone, but because holding the gun made me feel better.
When in doubt, grab a gun.
I could be a spokesperson for the NRA.
Is that so?
She asked, glancing at me sidelong.
Yup. For instance, this one time when I made out with the prom queen under the bleachers.
Even with the weapon in hand, every step we took toward the entrance made unease creep over my skin. There was no way this was going to end well.
That probably did happen, she said with a shrug. You know, after she got overweight and wound up working at Home Depot.
That is a stereotype I will not condone, I replied, glaring at her. I'm quite fond of the Home Depot girl. She's very nice, very helpful, and knows a ton about baseboards.
Do you even know any true things? Ricky asked, and I could have sworn there was a hint of jealousy in her voice.
I know you're the cutest girl I've ever met.
I flashed a cheesy grin at her as we reached the sidewalk leading to the entrance. She stared at me for a long time before looking away.
I'm going to allow that one, she said before grabbing me around the waist like I was a damsel in distress and leaping over the wall.
We landed on the other side of the wall, and she put me down, like jumping over a 20-foot-tall wall in a single bound was no big deal.
Now let's get serious. I can smell at least 3 guards up here slinking around. They're not werewolves, but I don't want a chance heading downwind. If we do, and there is one up here with them, the whole place will know we're here. I'd like to avoid that, since I don't know how many guards are in his hidden base below the whale tank.
Whale tank? Guards? Got it, I said, reaching out and grabbing her hand with my own before she could walk away. Hey, Ricky, can I ask you something?
Yeah?
She asked, turning to look at me with one eyebrow raised.
If I don't make it, I need you to call and tell them Pierce is dead, okay?
I said, letting go of her and pulling a frayed post-it note from my pocket. I held it out toward her.
I wrote the number down for you.
Mac, you're going to be fine, she said, glancing at the note like it was a live snake coated in dung.
I know, but I also believe in contingency plans. Pierce is going down, but I'm a lot less.
I waved my hand in her general direction.
Than you are. You're more likely to survive, in which case I need you to call and get them to let my sister and her son go. As long as Pierce is dead, they should honor the deal.
Ricky stared at me for a long time before snatching the note and shoving it into the pocket of her jeans.
I'm taking this because I think it will make you feel better, but when this is all over, you can call yourself.
I nodded. Thanks, Ricky.
Don't thank me,
she said, turning away and moving forward in a half-crouch.
Just don't die.
I pulled my second Glock free and smiled. Don't worry. I have no plans to meet death astride his pale horse anytime soon.
You know that's just alliteration, right?
She scoffed, glancing around the corner of a game booth. She held out one hand so I'd stop. I did. Yeah, what with the vampires, werewolves, and demon hunters, it'd be silly if that was real, too. I agreed, a smirk crossing my lips. Chapter 19. A hand burst out from the booth, grabbed Ricky by her hair, and yanked her into the depths of the game. The sound of a steak getting slapped against a meat counter filled my ears as I rushed forward. Before I reached her, two dudes in army-style buzz cuts stepped out from their hiding places behind the booths a few meters away and pointed their M16s at me. Thankfully, I was already firing my Glocks, which, I'll admit, had me feeling a little outgunned. I threw myself to the side as they unloaded their weapons at me. Bullets tore up the asphalt where I'd been as I put one silver bullet in the forehead of the left one. His faceplate shattered, and his head jerked violently backward in a spray of brain and bone. As he slumped to the ground, his finger must have seized upon the trigger, because his gun went wild, spraying bullets every which way. His partner ducked back behind the booth nearest him as the jerking of the gun spun the dead man's body around, creating a vortex of cover fire. I took the opportunity to sprint forward, and as the M16's static magazine emptied, I lined up my shot and put three bullets into the booth, at chest, abdomen, and knee height, hoping I'd catch him, even if he was ducking behind the cheap particle board. A muffled thump filled my ears as I crept sideways, guns at the ready. What I saw when I stepped past the edge made my heart sing with joy, which only proves I am really messed up in the head. The guy had been crouching there, but now there was no way he'd ever have an open casket funeral, unless he knew a guy who could fix a missing face. It was a little strange, because I felt absolutely nothing for the guy, nor for his partner. Actually, that wasn't true. I felt really happy they were dead, and I wasn't. It was weird, because I knew I should have felt bad. I just didn't. Thanks, I told the dead man as I shoved one of my Glocks into the waistband of my jeans and snagged his assault rifle. I had half a mind to shoot it off into the air and yell something like, "Ho, ho, ho, now I have a machine gun," but I didn't, because I was pretty sure more guards were on their way, and for all I knew, Ricky was bleeding out in the booth behind me while her assailant snuck up on me with a bazooka. I sprinted back toward the booth, careful to make sure no one shot me in the back, but as I leapt over the counter, designed to keep kids from getting too close to the fishes in the bowls while they threw balls, Ricky popped her head up. She had blood dripping from her mouth and had been crouching over a body of a guy who was missing his throat. I was thinking it was probably connected. Ricky wiped her mouth off with the back of her hand and stood. "What took you so long?" she asked, and as she said the words, her fangs visibly shrank back to normal-sized incisors. "I've been back here for 30 whole seconds." As I opened my mouth to reply, a spray of bullets smacked into the wood next to my head. I dropped, hitting the asphalt floor hard enough for pain to shoot up my forearms. Ricky was less lucky, since she took three rounds to the back. They burst through her chest, leaving massive exit wounds that only seemed to anger her. She turned, a snarl of rage exploding from her lips, and leapt in a way that made me wonder why she wasn't in the goddamned Olympics. I didn't see what happened, but the sounds I heard reminded me of those videos of lion attacks. By the time I got to my feet, Ricky was standing over the body of a man who appeared to have been beaten to death with his own arms. Her ninja t-shirt was sporting three gaping, gore-drenched holes, but the flesh beneath was pristine. With one quick movement, she tore off the guy's blood-stained flak jacket and threw it on, probably so she wouldn't flash me every time she moved. The prude. "Well, this is going well," she said, kneeling down and swiping the guy's radio off his belt as it chirped something about an alpha team. Ricky keyed the mic. "Alpha team can't hear you, because I ate them." She burped into the radio. "But I'm up for dessert. You game to be my huckleberry?" The voice on the other end said something I didn't catch,
mostly because it was cut off when Ricky crushed the radio into chunks of plastic and metal with her bare hand. I was suddenly very glad I had brought her along, but that thought was almost immediately replaced by a horrific realization. Pierce was supposed to be more powerful than Ricky. I wasn't sure if it was an inches or miles sort of thing, but the idea of going after someone stronger than a girl who had just leapt 20 feet and torn off a guy's arms so she could beat him to death with them lacked a certain appeal. Then again, I had guns loaded with silver bullets, and I was really good at shooting things in the face. I guess we all had our strengths. Ricky sniffed the air, her nostrils flaring wide. She grimaced. There's more coming, and now that they know I'm the one here, they'll likely be using silver ammunition, assuming they can afford it. She sighed. Let's get a move on. Shamu is over there.
Why did you let them know you were here, then? I asked, jogging behind her.
I'll admit, it really wasn't a bad angle to follow her from. Would you be scared if a werewolf just tore apart your entire team of highly trained professionals in the span of a minute? She asked, glancing at me over her shoulder before leaping over a rope leading to the section of the park that housed large aquatic mammals. And then said she was going to eat you?
Okay, well, that's an excellent point, I replied, because really, it was. She was on my side, and it had scared me. I couldn't imagine what it was doing to a bunch of guys who were being paid to hunt her, probably rethinking their life choices. Still, it bugged me. Why were guys like that in here at all? And why were they normal humans instead of werewolves? If Pierce was this big badass werewolf, why weren't his henchmen werewolves too?
Chapter 20. As Ricky pushed on the door labeled Employees Only, it opened with a screech of tortured steel. So far we hadn't seen any other bad guys, even though I'd been on the lookout for them. Maybe Ricky's whole I'm a big scary werewolf shtick had worked. It was either that, or they were lying in wait to ambush us. Call me crazy, but I was pretty sure it was the second reason. Ricky sniffed the air and, evidently satisfied no one was going to shoot us, stepped in ahead of me, presumably because, since bullets didn't seem to do much more than anger her. That was fine. If she wanted to be all I'm a modern woman and make herself into my human werewolf shield so I could avoid getting perforated by bullets, I was fine with that. Besides, she was wearing the flak jacket. See? I'm all about equal opportunities. There must have been a motion sensor inside, because as soon as she stepped inside, the light came on, revealing a plethora of wetsuits and assorted scuba equipment. Ricky mostly ignored it as she walked across the room toward a red steel door with the words Danger High Voltage written on it in black 2-inch letters. Without even bothering to try the knob to see if it was unlocked, she kicked it so hard the steel door folded inward like an accordion before tearing off the hinges and flying backward into the darkness. It clanged against the floor. As silence descended through the tiny room, a bunch of red dots lit Ricky up like a Christmas tree. Oh no, Ricky said, before bullets came flying out of the doorway she'd just assaulted. They hit her high in the chest and sent her pitching backward across the ground toward me. I didn't have time to see if any had penetrated her jacket as I opened up my stolen M16, emptying the remaining magazine into the doorway while scrambling forward. I grabbed Ricky under the arms and pulled her out of the line of fire as cursory cover fire started to streak back through the doorway, taking chunks out of the surrounding walls. The moment my gun clicked empty, more gunfire erupted from the hallway beyond. The cement pinged with the sound of ricochets as I dropped Ricky behind a huge steel table and fished out my grenade. I popped